So I'm going to get started, and Joel, since you're the only one here, you can also...
Oh, he's one of you guys, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're like way outnumbered. So,
okay.
So we can't just touch on the big issues. There was a presentation that was scheduled, you know, that I was going to give.
I think
tonight.
Your minutes look good.
But, yeah. But I don't have to give it all, or I can just give you the gist of it. And basically, you know, we'll kind of go through. But again, we do have some new employees. Custer Turnbull is a new city planner with AMATS. Daryl Kleinhens, and then the rest of us, we've all been around. Jeff Gardner, Seth Bush, Heather Rydell, and you are Joel Helms.
I only show up once a year. So.
Yeah, I know. you were not at the last meeting, which I'm not meaning that to... So, Joel, you were... but what we did at the last meeting, and you'll see reflected in the minutes, is we actually had Jack Noble from ODOT District 4 attend, and he spent the evening talking about the way that ODOT does pavement, manages their pavement system. So, you know, how they pick which roads to fund for paving, how they treat roads different ways. There was actually really, I thought, a fairly informative presentation. The minutes reflect that on the following page off the agenda, sort of the main thing. The other thing that I just want to touch on that is, I think, important is that we're going to change some of the CIC stuff again, that we're going to try to link it back up again with our other meetings and do it six times a year instead of quarterly, so that, because I think we felt like even though we tried some speaker stuff and we were doing it quarterly, it was almost like it became less of a priority or something, so we think we want to move it back. They take it back to being part of our meeting so that when you come, we'll have the full agenda of what the policy committee is discussing, what the TAC committee is discussing, and it'll be the Thursday before the policy committee meeting. So we're going to add two more meetings, and we're going to include those elements. We're also trying to do some new survey stuff. So by your right arm there is a short survey that we're asking people to fill out, trying to get more input on asking them basic questions and kind of creating some awareness for what we're doing. Do you have any questions on that?
No, I think one of your biggest things with the CIC is that the core group was a old core group.
Yeah.
It had been here forever and ever. And you guys, I mean, you're the past director. I mean, he really, anything that we mentioned outside of trains, we mentioned it, and you guys resolved it.
Yeah.
Outside of trains.
Huh? That's true, outside of trains. Yeah.
So maybe there's less interest in that old group because we got everything we wanted.
Well,
the only thing left was bicycles, and you're doing left and right on that.
I don't know. Did you hear that Mike passed away? Mike Ondecker?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Passed away in March, I believe.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I mean, that's another thing. I mean, just like you said, but, you know, and Mike was a strong, you know, and there's other people that we used to see a lot, especially back in the Silver Lake days and all that, Don Dietrich, you know, I don't know what his status is, and people like that that used to show up quite a bit.
Well, we'll see on the November meeting, usually. He showed up last November, didn't he?
Actually, did he? I've seen him once here, I think, since we moved it. We haven't seen him a lot. But, you know, and so that's one of the other things that we're struggling with a little bit is just it seems like as trends change that engaging the public via just public meeting isn't as effective as it once was. That we've got to reach out other ways.
But it only takes an email. I mean, we get in contact with you instantly now.
Well, I know, exactly. Right. So
why show up at a meeting?
Exactly. And so that's kind of some of the things that we're struggling with a little bit. But we felt, too, like one of the things that we want to do with, even though it sounds like we're adding more meetings, we want the alignment with our mail-outs, with our policy stuff, because we feel like, one, even from a federal perspective, it ensures that we have the public has an open opportunity to comment on each one of our, you know, documents that we're creating. And getting to the quarterly thing, we brought most of the stuff in, but it wasn't nearly as consistent as when we had it sort of with the policy meetings. now. But so that's one of the struggles that I think we're going to continue to have is, you know, one, I don't think you can gauge public engagement by the number of people you have in the room anymore, just because there's so many other ways to get that information. But two, we're going to try to make it so that we're going to at least make sure that we discuss the content that the policy committee is going to discuss. So that's kind of where we are on that, and you know, we could go on longer about it, but that's really kind of the crux of it. Do you want to hear a presentation about regional job hubs?
No, that's the concept I'm familiar with, and I've been working on it for quite some time.
Yeah.
And the importance of it.
Well, and some of the things that we're starting to focus on are we're looking at traded sector type jobs. Traded sector. So if you can think of like it used
trading.
To be, yeah, traded sector, which it used to be sort of like basic versus non-basic employment. You know, like the basic job was the factory job that because of that job it created four other jobs. I don't know if you're familiar with that whole, but so traded sector is kind of, it basically means the same thing. It's the jobs that we've identified that tend to have an overall positive effect on the community in terms of one job through a traded sector job leads to two other service sector jobs and more money in the economy. And it's basically manufacturing, distribution, warehousing, hospital medical is included in that. And so what we did was we kind of started mapping it out and sort of seeing the, I'm just going to show you the maps because I'll skip through some of the presentation stuff, but kind of identified where those locations, because these jobs all seem to be clustered in certain locations, and they're all sort of in those industrial type areas. So obviously, like, you know, the Twinsburg area, the Akron Canton Airport, they're, you know, it's like if you look at a map, you can see the distribution of warehouses and distribution and that type of stuff, Gilchrist Road, all that sort of stuff. And so one of the things that we're presenting to our board, and this shows kind of the mix of what those jobs look like. So the one thing that's really fascinating to me is for our region is like, if you took out the hospital or healthcare sector, Twinsburg actually has more employment than sort of the downtown Akron sector of these traded sector jobs. So Twinsburg is one of our biggest job hubs, essentially. And then you see the others all the way down the line of their mix of employment. And that kind of is, you know, the blue or greenish is manufacturing, yellow is other industrial, and then the orange is office professional. And these jobs, obviously, like, are quantified in thousands. And so one of the things that we're just looking at from a policy perspective is what we're starting to notice with these areas is that the old job hub areas, so like Akron, Goodyear area, Gilchrist Road, those areas in the last 5 to 10 years, or in the last, I think, 10 years we looked at it, have, well, 12 years actually, have been shrinking. You know, there's not as many jobs there as there used to be. And the areas outside of that center sector are areas where you're seeing growth. And so those traded sector jobs are growing. So Green seeing growth, Twinsburg area, Aurora, Streetsboro. And one of the big issues that just creates over time is the transit issue from, and not just transit, but just access to jobs. And how do people get to those jobs, especially if they're second shift, third shift, et cetera. And so one of the things, that, you know, so what we're just starting to do with our board that we're going to be talking about is sort of, look, we know that there are these job hubs that are established, and they have existed for the last 40 years or so, 40, 50 years. So, you know, one of the things that we have to be concerned about is that if new job hubs start being created in green fields, that stretches out our infrastructure resources even more. So, you know, more new development is going to stress our system. Transit has trouble serving anybody outside the central area, and especially, like I said, if it's off shift, if it's not that, you know, prime level of prime service area from 6 a.m. to, you know, 7 p.m., it's very difficult for those people to get service. So what do we need to expect of transit as these hubs, you know, because what we're getting now, and a great example, I don't know how familiar you are, I'm assuming you've been by like where the Costco is and Boston Heights and the R House furniture moved down there from Walton Hills. So, you know, they moved to this place in Boston Heights, and then they call Metro and say, like, hey, we have employees that need transportation. Like, how can you help us out? And Metro's like, we can't. You know, we don't have the equipment, we don't have the manpower, and we don't have an efficient way to service you because you're out in the middle of nowhere and outside the route structure. So what do we expect from that? And then also the issues that we have from the business side is just that, and again, using the Boston Heights example, is when a business moves from Walton Hills in Cuyahoga County to Boston Heights in Summit County, when you look at things like transit especially, there's no crossing of county borders when it comes to transit service. So for businesses, understanding that, look, if your workforce is primarily in Cuyahoga County and you move to Summit, there's going to be challenges there if people rely on things like public transportation to get you there. So in a nutshell, that's sort of the stuff that we're looking at, and we're not anywhere near to like actually identifying if we should even have policies about it. It's more an idea of kind of having that discussion of really just identifying things. And what we've seen is that in Northeast Ohio, like, that's been the trend. All the central city area job hubs are shrinking, and the suburban ones are growing. And again, it's not necessarily bad, but when your services all kind of fit well with the job hubs that are shrinking, how do we service the ones that are growing? So I think it's kind of like an interesting issue. It's one that we think is important, especially even also from like freight management, so understanding where some, being able to use maps like this and understanding where some of our freight needs are going to be in terms of whether it's using Route 8, I-480, 271, et cetera, or down to 77 in the south. So it's basically data that we've collected working with the Fund for Economic Future that we've highlighted that we think is really important. And so we've been kind of collecting that data and analyzing it and trying to and having the conversation with our board, like, is this something important? Is this something that we think we should be considering in some sort of way? And that's kind of where we are right now. Any questions?
I see an overlapping of services here in that Northeast Ohio Four County Regional Association.
Oh, NEFCO?
With sewers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in development and transportation. Who's coordinating between the two of them?
It's just us. I mean, that's kind of an interesting question.
I mean, because I don't see NEFCO doing anything except what the bureaucracy wants. There's no check on NEFCO. It's purely
in terms of like the planned sewer. The what is that planning called? 208 storm or
201? 208.
Yeah. 208. Yeah.
Facility planning.
Yeah. For the future sewer, basically.
But it seems like your studies are much more, from what I've seen,
cautious.
Participated in. I mean,
yeah.
Much more in depth and more practical than an arbitrary, well, somebody wants this done, we'll do a political favor, we'll change the plan, or da da da, we'll put the sewer in. You know, there's a couple million dollars being flipped over there. But I would say yours is more, I want to say, socially acceptable.
It's interesting. I mean, we do try to coordinate with NEFCO, and especially when they do their updates to their 208 planning, because we think it's really important. We have employees that do try to attend their board meetings as well. Daryl's kind of picked up that flag, so that's something that he can be a fly on the wall for, and also potentially let us know if there's concerns. So, I mean, that is an issue, is that we need to do a little bit better job of coordinating with NEFCO. And, you know, the problem is it's just two different boards and two different compositions, and the way our board looks, I think, over the past, really since the recession, has been, look, we need to preserve what we have, more so than worry about, brand new growth in greenfields. We need to make sure that we're, and I think that our board has really rallied around that cry of trying to be really practical about, not saying that new stuff can never be built, but just having the understanding that there's, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. For every new development, there's going to be, positives and negatives, and how do we deal with those, and what's the understanding of the local community as well as the regional agencies.
But you have both the same policy committees.
It's weird. We do, but we don't. And I mean, well, one, you've got Stark County, so that's in all of Wayne County. But then, for whatever reason, like the composition of the actual board is different people. You know, like we get a lot of city engineers and mayors, and sometimes at the NEFCO board, they get some mayors, but they also get planners. And like Akron has how many seats on their board? I want to say it's at least three or four. You know, they're just the whole way and I think the way that, you know, Joe Hadley's group has focused on it is, and I think the reality is in our region, there's good, you know, is that, you know, economic development, it's so competitive that they want to do whatever they can to try to encourage development. And I think you're right, we have a slightly different approach. Like, we want development, but we want it to be smart, you know, for lack of a better word.
Functional.
Yeah, and make
it's
sure
it's sustainable.
Yes, yeah. And so, no, that's a really good point. I mean, I think that it's something that we can always do a better job on. And even trying to, you know, and Joe sits on our technical advisory board, but, you know, I think sometimes it has a different cultural animal in terms of where they take their products. So it's, I acknowledge that you're not wrong. There's probably could be more coordination for sure. And what we're saying by coordination is they should just listen to what we say.
I don't see any direction that they have or you guys do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand that.
And I've gone to quite a few of those meetings.
Do they have public meetings, or is it just open board meetings?
It's an open board meeting. Yeah. You can get the minutes, obviously online or
right.
You
know, right.
But they've never ever taken into consideration any citizen that's spoken. Nothing has ever. It's,
yeah.
It's when it gets to the board, it's concrete. It will not change.
Yeah. Hmm. So yeah, I mean that's the issue that we're dealing with. And then it kind of, that all dovetails into the other thing you see on the agenda is the Coordinated Human Services Transportation Plan. And that's a plan that looks at trying to coordinate the transit authorities with social service providers to ensure that we're maximizing the coverage for people with low income, disabilities, and the elderly. So we're required by law to put together a plan like that that basically says, okay, you know, the transit agencies are required federally when they receive FTA funds to cover certain things like ADA type requirements. But then you also have these social service agencies that own vehicles that, you know, will pick people up and take them to trips. And they're all small agencies. Some of them are larger, United Disability Services, et cetera. And the purpose of that plan is to coordinate with those folks to say, how can we kind of spread this out better? And again, it even goes into, especially for the low-income side, is, you know, if you don't own a car, how do we provide the best access possible for getting to a job, especially an evening shift or something like that? Who are the agencies that can fill that gap? Is it as simple as Uber, you know, or a taxi company, or a nonprofit, or a regional transit agency? And so the purpose of that plan is to kind of wrap our arms around all those groups, coordinate with them, and hopefully incrementally kind of improve our service to fill in where we think there are gaps to that service.
When did this start?
Just started. There was
officially, I guess. I mean, you've always kind of been.
Yeah, I mean, we had a plan that was approved, Jeff, in 2014.
2008 was the first one.
Yes, it all started in 2008. Then we had one in 2014, and this new one, there was just the first stakeholder group with all as many, you know, where all the social service agencies were invited to Metro with PARTA and had that first discussion of, you know, okay, where do we see the gaps and what can we do about them? And the reality is, you want to strive for total coverage, but it's virtually impossible, and so it's looking at how do you, you know, are there ways we can coordinate better to ensure people are getting better service than they are now, especially when it comes to disabled, elderly, low-income. So that's sort of the third prong. And it kind of fits in a little bit with the job hubs because because of those issues of, like, you know, if you live in Akron and you work the second shift at a place in Green and you don't own a car, you might be able to take the bus to work, but you're not going to be able to get the bus home at, you know, whatever second shift would close down if you worked from, you know, 2 to 10 or something like that. And so that's sort of some of the issues that they're looking at. And then on top of it, obviously, as the population ages, there's more and more need for, you know, the ability for people to get to doctor's appointments and to the hospital for, you know, all that stuff. And so it's another, I'd say, like, really challenging issue that no one plan is going to make it, you know, work 100% better. But we're shooting to kind of have incremental improvements.
I think what the federal government wants out of this plan is to make sure that the social service agencies get the assistance that they need from the transit agencies. And so this is the public way to do that. This is to get a public transit agency, try to get them together with them.
But you said you've been doing it and coordinating it for the last almost decade, and I've never heard of any coordination here in this aspect. And I guess, is it done?
Well, Metro and PARTA both do door-to-door service for the elderly and disabled. And the social service agencies have a number of clients.
So this is the first time you've actually brought everybody in together?
No, well, actually, yeah. They were brought in 2008, and the original plan was we should put together a mobility management system that, you know, we should fund to basically, you know, if you need a ride, you go to this portal on the web, and you say, I need to get from here to here at this time, and the system will spit out, you know, buy a ticket for UDF, or, you know, basically schedule it up. We put $2 million into that, into developing the software, got to the point where it was developed, and all the agencies were like, well, that's not our proprietary software. Like, we use this program, or we use this program, and it just fell apart, right? And so then the second iteration was, okay, we need to do better coordination, but a mobility management system that doesn't appear to be an effective way to do that. So what do we focus on? And so the second was looking at, okay, the needs are so great that just if we can buy more buses and get more vehicles in the hands of a UDS or other nonprofits, that they'll be able to, you know, widen their reach, help more people, et cetera, as well as continuing the aim of trying to get everybody coordinated on a better basis. And so it's kind of like incrementally changing. So this is the third iteration where we're getting everybody together again and saying, okay, what can we try to do to improve it? You know, so we did a big trial balloon of something that was pretty, I don't want to say forward thinking, but very, you know, very proactive of, we're going to solve this thing. Hit a lot of problems. Second time around, kind of pulled back from that and said, okay, we don't think this is going to work. And so now we're sort of at the third iteration to say, okay, where can we find the, you know, the economies of scale, so to speak. And so that's what this plan is about. Any other questions?
No. And I think it's perfect timing to coordinate with all your urban planning and, mm-hmm, your bicycles and sidewalks and everything else.
Yeah.
It should be successful this time.
We hope so. I mean, it's, like I said, this stuff just tends to not be very easy, and the more cooks you have in the kitchen, the more challenging it becomes. So, but we're also working on that, so. But yeah, and then I guess the last thing is if you have any questions or any concerns about anything in the realm of transportation, that we're actually under contract with EDG, Environmental Design Group, in Green to do some connectivity planning for a Connecting Communities grant. I'm sure there will be public meetings and stuff regarding that, but they're looking to improve connectivity throughout Green. So just an FYI that there's going to be some planning being done. Heather, I don't know if you have anything to add about that, about the actual grant itself. Because it's basically, I think it's a community-wide, isn't it?
It is. It's supposed to be for the entire city. So we have a consultant that we've hired. We are, we just got the contract signed, so we'll be kicking that grant off in a few weeks. And One of the things that we'll have, we'll be asking the consultant to do is to narrow down, like, what do we really need to look at? Because we can't possibly come up with all of the best connections for the entire city. So where are the, you know, most important spots that we need to take a look at?
And we'll be working with Sarah Herring and Wayne Weathy, and the mayor has been involved as well. So
there was a survey that the City of Green put out probably a month ago, maybe a little more. It was on their website. You never saw that one?
No.
I think they sent. Did they send out a newsletter?
Yes.
I thought it was included in that as well.
So get ready for that one.
three, 4 year groups, politicians ago, I was very active in getting elected. Three out of the seven council members that were for that, and they just spun their wheels. They could not get any community people to. I mean, nobody was interested in it. I mean, they got elected, but there was no one that really. And after they put their initial couple committees together, I mean, meetings together, and came up with a basic plan, there was no support whatsoever. I mean, the mayor and other council members didn't want to give them any power.
Yeah.
So they were sucked dry. And after about 3 years, they have 4 year terms, after 3 years, all the steam was just out.
Right.
The balloons all popped. And now, essentially, that is a big philosophy down there. Okay, if a consultant says it, it's got to be good.
Right.
Heck with our citizens.
Right.
It's strange that the citizens, usually the people that's going to be related to it should have the best input.
Yeah.
But
well, since then, which I don't know when that was exactly, but we've done a bike and brainstorm in Green, and it was very well attended. And the mayor is sitting on the, well, with the group.
We got a good mayor
people.
This time.
And he's
very
a big involved.
Bike advocate. And big in trails, and
yes.
You know, and obviously too, I think, and hopefully we don't run into, I mean, I know the pipeline is a whole other issue entirely in Green, but hopefully we don't run into anything with that. But, I think it has the potential to be a good project to get some real stuff. And I think the one thing Green's always shown is that they're one of our agencies that does implement, and that's from a transportation dollars perspective, that's a positive. Unless you don't make
the project. Well, let me throw one thing at you, is that obviously I am a pro pipeline person, only for the fact that the amount of the footage of pipelines, this one big pipeline is only representing 5% of what we already have.
Yeah.
And they're saying, hey, they're putting a pipeline next to these dams. Well, there's other pipelines even closer to the dams.
Yeah.
They're existing, they're older and everything else. I see the pipelines as a perfect avenue for our connectivity.
Well, they potentially, I mean, and that's why I was almost saying, like, I don't know if we'll run into it or not, because if it ends up happening, you've got these easements, and, there's potential there, but I probably shouldn't.
I have no feeling of the pipeline whatsoever.
Well,
whether this pipeline, let's get out of this pipeline,
right,
but I think I brought up in the previous. We've got trolley lines out there,
right,
Greenfield and Green.
Yeah.
Old trolley lines that have totally been abandoned. We got a canal.
Yeah.
Places where the canal,
right.
Right of ways to put canals in from, a century and a half ago.
Yeah.
And these are perfect places to put things. And then we realized, we got trolley ways, we got canals, but we got 10 times more pipeline right of ways.
Yeah.
There's no limit. They go everywhere.
Right. Yeah. No. So, I mean, I think that'll be an interesting project, and I'm sure, we'll be looking for more input. And so hopefully that'll at least be of special interest to you as a resident. So. But anything else?
No.
All right. You're free to go.
Could I entertain a motion to adjourn?
So moved.